Good morning. Welcome to Talking Information Center News. This is Michelle Balcony coming to you from the TIC studio. Friday, August 21st, 2026. Today we are reading the latest headlines from Newsmax and Wire Services. Vice President Vance says the GOP holdouts stymie a path for the Save America Act. Vice President J.D. Vance said Thursday of this week, the Trump administration has explored using authority as president of the Senate to overrule the parliament to pass the Save America Act, but a handful of Republican senators remain an obstacle. Vance said that the problem is not the 60-vote threshold needed to overcome a Democrat filibuster, but whether Republicans can muster enough votes to sustain his ruling if he overrules the parliamentarian. Vance blamed a few holdouts committed to what he called archaic Senate rules. So we've actually looked into this. As the president of the Senate under the U.S. Constitution, there are things we can do, Vance said. We can take over the Senate chair. I can occupy the chair. We can overrule the parliamentarian. Those things are very possible, he continued. But the fundamental issue with that is not the 60-vote threshold, it's the 50-vote threshold. So if, for example, I took over the Senate chair and I overruled the parliamentarian, we would need to sustain 50 senators plus me, Vance said. Now, obviously, most Republicans would support that, but could we get 50? That is the big question. That's something that obviously the president and I and others in the White House have been working on, trying to have this conversation. Vance said most Senate Republicans support such a move, but a small group of holdouts is standing in the way because of their commitment to Senate procedure. The problem is not the majority of GOP senators. It is that you've got a few holdouts who just do not want to do that because they are so committed to these archaic rules, Vance said. President Donald Trump has championed this legislation, which has passed the House already. It would require documentary proof of citizenship to register to vote, and photo identification to cast a ballot in federal elections, while imposing new requirements on absentee voting. It also would require states to regularly check and maintain voter rolls to identify and remove non-citizens. In June of this year, the parliamentarian stymied an effort to pass the legislation through budget reconciliation, ruling that it did not comply with the Senate's Byrd rule. That rule determines which provisions can be included in reconciliation packages that can pass with a simple majority and void the 60-vote threshold, which is needed to overcome a filibuster. The Save America Act has passed the House. President Trump has criticized Senate Majority Leader John Thune, a Republican from South Dakota, over the impasse and has called for Parliamentarian Elizabeth McDonough to be fired. Vice President Vance said the Senate GOP is significantly improved from previous Congress, but argued that some Republican senators are effectively unilaterally disarming by adhering to procedural rules that he predicted Democrats will abandon the next time they control the chamber. There's a good news, bad news situation here, which is we have a way better United Senate today, a way better Senate GOP today than we had 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. But you still have some senators who are committed to these ridiculous parliamentary rules, even though they know the Democrats are not, he said. This is what I find so preposterous about this, as it's basically you have a few GOP senators who are unilaterally disarming, even though they know that Senate Democrats, whenever the Senate Democrats next take the majority, hopefully 30 to 40 to 50 years from now, but hopefully never. But if they do, in 2 years from now or 4 years from now, the Senate Democrats are going to blow up the filibuster, Vance continued. And this is why the president says we've got to just get rid of the filibuster now. Then you don't have to worry about the parliamentarian. Vance said the holdouts, whom he did not name, believe Democrats would preserve the filibuster in return if Republicans protect it now. I mean, look, to play devil's advocate or to try to understand their position as well as I can, what they say, and I think they genuinely believe this. I don't know how, but I think they genuinely believe that if they protect the filibuster for the next couple of years, then let's say Democrats take over in 4 years, the Democrats are going to turn the favor and protect the filibuster when they are in power, Vance said. I don't know how anyone can believe that. We have to remember that if you go back to Kristen Sinema and Joe Manchin, by the way, two very good public servants, moderate Democrats, I disagreed with them on a lot of issues, he continued. But they did protect the filibuster, and what happened to them? Were they promoted by the Democrat Party? No. They were destroyed by Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and the Senate Democrats. Vance was referring to efforts during the Biden administration to change Senate filibuster rules to advance Democrat voting legislation, which were opposed by then Democrat Senators Sinema of Arizona and Manchin of West Virginia. They sent a message that if you ever dare to stand against the National Senate Democrat leadership, we are going to destroy your career, and that means the filibuster has to go this way, he said. I guarantee you, even if there are some good Democrats in the Senate who would preserve the filibuster to sort of show good faith to their Republican colleagues, they are never going to be allowed to do it by Senate leadership. Vice President Vance said Democrats want to end the filibuster so they can add Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia as states, pack the Supreme Court, and weaken election integrity. He said Republican holdouts must wake up and recognize the threat. And that is what I think that, again, it's not the majority of the Senate GOP, but a few senators have got to wake up to the reality that the Democrats are going to blow up the filibuster and try to destroy the country, pack the Supreme Court, Vance said. We need to end the filibuster to save American elections. It's the smart and also the patriotic thing to do. Vice President Vance says Scott Bessent has a plan to outgrow the debt. Vice President J.D. Vance said Thursday of this week that Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent has a plan backed by President Donald Trump to get the U.S. economy growing faster than the national debt, which recently surpassed $40 trillion. Asked about the growing debt and pressure in the bond market, Vance said Trump has discussed creating a sovereign wealth fund and argued that American taxpayers are being hurt by high borrowing cost. There's a weird way where American taxpayers are getting fleeced because of the very high debt charges, Vance said. By the way, very high debt charges that started under the Biden administration. This is a crisis that we inherited and I think has gotten a lot better. The national debt stood at more than $40.01 trillion as of Wednesday, according to Treasury Department data. Of that amount, approximately $32.27 trillion was debt held by the public, with the remainder consisting of intragovernmental holdings. Earlier this month, the Joint Economic Committee reported the debt had increased by $2.88 trillion over the previous year. It also said the average interest rate on marketable national debt had risen 3.44% in July, compared with 1.48% 5 years earlier. Vice President Vance said that Bessent is working to change the relationship between economic growth and the growth of the debt. Scott Bessent, the amazing Treasury Secretary, he has had a very discreet plan, of course, supported by the President and the United States, to get our country to a point where our economy is growing faster than our debt, he said. And if you look, we are on track. Vance said the administration inherited an economy in which debt was growing faster than gross domestic product. We actually do have a plan to get the economy growing faster than the debt, he said, and that is the most important thing. J.D. Vance did not provide details of Bessent's plan. The issue we've had under the Biden administration and what we're still kind of dealing with is that the debt was growing faster than the American GDP, Vance said. That's the problem. That's something that we are certainly fixing every single day in the Trump administration. Vice President Vance added that Bessent knows it is a problem, and he's got the president's empowerment to do something about it. Regarding Iran, Vice President Vance says they could survive another couple of months. Vice President J.D. Vance said Thursday of this week that Iran could withstand U.S.-led economic pressure for a couple of weeks or a couple of months, possibly longer, a day after President Donald Trump vowed to unleash the most crushing economic operation ever against Tehran. Asked how long Iran could survive under the economic pressure, Vance said the regime is already feeling the effects. You know, it's always tough to predict that, and that is honestly not really our focus, Vance said. They are under a ton of pressure. That pressure is conducive to our goal of ensuring that they do not have a nuclear weapon, whether they can survive a couple of weeks or a couple of months or possibly longer. President Trump said Wednesday of this week that Iran would face the most crushing economic operation ever, intensifying pressure on Tehran as the administration seeks to prevent the regime from building and rebuilding its nuclear program. Vice President Vance said Thursday that preventing Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon remains the administration's overriding objective. So long as they don't have a nuclear weapon, that's what we're focused on. That's what the president, frankly, has already accomplished, he said. We are just trying to ensure that they do not try to rebuild that program, and that is going to require some consistent engagement. The administration's economic fury campaign has targeted Iran's oil reserves, shadow banking system, cryptocurrency operations, and sanctions evasion networks. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said August 7th that Iran's shadow banking system was buckling under economic fury and that the regime was running out of ways to move money. Treasury separately said this month that Iranian actors had used digital asset exchanges to launder billions of dollars and evade sanctions. The department also has targeted an Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps-backed operation accused of extracting revenue from commercial vessels transiting the Strait of Hormuz. Vance said the administration has military, diplomatic, and economic tools available to pressure Iran. Sometimes you've just got to use the economic tools. That is what the president is focused on right now, he said. Sometimes you have to use military tools. Vance also argued that Iran's attempts to disrupt shipping through the Strait of Hormuz have failed to produce the energy crisis that Tehran sought. Oil has come down substantially. Gas prices are down about 50 cents from their peak, he said. We have shown an ability to do something amazing for our national security while also doing something that protects the economic interest of the American people. Vance's Hamptons fundraiser nets more than $5 million. Vice President J.D. Vance hosted a fundraiser Wednesday of this week in Southampton, New York, that raised more than $5 million and brought together a group of younger Republican donors as he weighs a possible 2028 presidential bid. The event drew about 35 people and was held at the home of Omid Malik, president of investment firm 1789 Capital, Axios reported Thursday of this week. Among those attending were Donald Trump Jr., Polymarket founder Shane Copeland, and GRV Strategies founder Garrett Ventry. Cantor Fitzgerald president Brandon Lutnick, the son of Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick, also attended, along with World Liberty Financial co-founder Zach Witkoff, the son of senior Trump advisor Steve Witkoff. Chris Buskirk, president of the Rockbridge Network, and a Vance ally, was one of the hosts. Following a reception, about 20 people attended a smaller dinner. Reception attendees donated $100,000 to the Republican National Committee, while dinner attendees contributed $250,000. The fundraiser offered a look at the financial network Vance is building among Republican donors in their 20s and 30s as speculation continues over whether he will seek the presidency in 2028. Vance serves as the RNC's finance chair, a role that has given him access to many of the Republican Party's leading donors. He has hosted dozens of fundraising events around the country since taking that position last year. Allies of Vance say the relationships he has developed through the RNC have helped him establish the fundraising infrastructure that could support a presidential campaign. Vance is expected to decide whether to pursue a 2028 presidential campaign sometime after the November 3rd midterm elections. The USS Washington aircraft carrier arrives in the Middle East. The Asia-based USS George Washington aircraft carrier is now operating in the Middle East, the U.S. military said Thursday, relieving a long-deployed carrier following reports of mental health challenges and supply shortages aboard while it was supporting the Iran war. U.S. Central Command, which oversees military operations in the Middle East, said on social media that the carrier arrived in the region Wednesday of this week. It was not clear when the USS Abraham Lincoln would arrive back in the United States or whether it would make a port stop along the way, but the journey takes just more than a month. The Washington arrived as concerns have grown about the Lincoln's lengthy deployment, which has included a record-setting uninterrupted time at sea of more than 250 days and about reports of crew stress and poor mental health, as well as supply shortages, including food and hygiene products. Several Democrat lawmakers have pressed the Department of Defense for accountability over conditions aboard the Lincoln, which Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has said were completely misrepresented. Hegseth spoke with the Lincoln's crew last week, and Admiral Brad Cooper, head of U.S. Central Command, visited this past weekend. In an editorial published Sunday by the Wall Street Journal, Cooper said the crew delivered a performance for the ages, and now you are going home. extended deployments of carriers wear on service members who are away from home for long periods and increase strain on the ship and its equipment. While renewed hostilities between the U.S. and Iran calmed in recent weeks, the Navy is enforcing a reimposed blockade on Iranian ports in the Strait of Hormuz, and the Trump administration has offered no clarity on how it intends to wind down the war. Secretary Hegseth has said the U.S. can maintain the blockade indefinitely. President Donald Trump this week downplayed reports about conditions on the Lincoln, which left its home port in San Diego in November of 2025 and arrived in the Middle East in January of 2026. President Trump called the nearly 9 months at sea that the sailors endured a good period of time, but added that over the years, we've had them out there much longer. Trump told reporters Monday of this week that he spoke with a retired admiral over the weekend who recounted being on ships for much longer. Trump said the admiral assured him that the Lincoln is beautifully maintained and beautifully taken care of. Trump did not name the admiral. In a statement Sunday after visiting the Lincoln, Cooper praised the carrier's leaders for prioritizing mental health and resilience. History will record this deployment as one of the most operationally intense and consequential of the modern era, Cooper said. The USS Washington joins the USS George H.W. Bush in the Middle East, leaving Asia without an American carrier strike group at a time when China has shown more signs of aggression. The lack of a U.S. carrier in the Pacific may be short-lived if the Navy deploys another in the next couple of months, but it shows how the open-ended operations with Iran are running some American sailors ragged, analysts say, while the Trump administration further retreats from the Asia-Pacific region and focuses on the Western Hemisphere. As reported by the Associated Press. Iranian oil to China is seized by the U.S. blockade. Offers of Iranian crude to Chinese buyers have declined, and prices have jumped this week, as the U.S. blockade has cut Tehran's shipments, according to trade sources, with the threat of more sanctions from Washington looming. The U.S. reimposed its blockade of Iran's shipping and ports on July 13th as a deal to halt the war between them broke down in an attempt to cut off oil sales. Tehran's primary source of hard currency, compounding earlier losses from wartime strikes on its energy infrastructure. The number of offers for Iranian oil cargoes to China for September and October delivery has declined from July and August cargoes, four trade sources familiar with the matter said. The offers have declined as barrels already in ships on the water have been sold, they said. Iran's oil exports have fallen since mid-July, with no visible crossings of the Strait of Hormuz by supertankers carrying Iranian crude since that time, according to data from ship tracking company Kipler, although many vessels turn off their location transponders, making them difficult to find. That squeeze threatens a key feedstock for independent refiners, known colloquially as teapots, located in China's eastern province of Shandong, which account for about a fifth of China's refining capacity and are at the top buyers of sanctioned oil. Three of the trade sources said some Iranian crude, typically sold at discounts, was being offered at premiums to ICE Brent futures, with one source citing a premium of about $2 a barrel. That was an abrupt shift as cargoes of Iranian light were being offered earlier this week at a discount of around $3 a barrel, the same as a month earlier. Iranian crude held in floating storage outside the U.S. blockade zone has fallen to about 80 million barrels from about 105 million barrels before the blockade was reinstated, Kpler data shows. Two of the sources estimated that only about 30 million barrels of Iranian crude remained in Asian waters, half of the usual levels. Kpler senior crude oil analyst Miyu Zhu estimated there are 40 million barrels of Iranian oil ships in Malaysian waters east of Singapore, though most of that has been promised to buyers. This suggests buyers could face virtually no new Iranian supplies available for late September delivery onwards, since no laden Iranian tankers have so far managed to break through the U.S. blockade, she wrote in a Friday LinkedIn post. With the uncertainty over Iranian supplies, one teapot bought Brazil's Lapa crude this week, while others were looking at Iraq's Bashar crude, two of the sources said. Given the thin Iranian availability among and amid the U.S. blockade, Chinese teapots are now looking beyond Russia and Iran, said Sun Jian, senior analyst at Energy Aspects. China's Iranian oil imports have dropped from a year ago following the start of the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran in February 26 that has cut Middle Eastern oil exports. Shipments fell to 785,000 barrels per day in June, the lowest since February 2023, provisional Kpler data shows. Imports in July likely rose to 823,000 BPD, but the intake so far in August has dropped to 534,000 BPD, the data shows. Last year, China's Iran purchases averaged 1.4 million BPD, according to Kpler. On Thursday of this week, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent threatened Iran with the toughest sanctions in history, with details to come on Monday to pressure Iran to reopen the Strait of Hormuz and end the war. That has China's independent refiners on alert for further sanctions targeting specific buyers, a source at one of the plants said. However, the source said new sanctions were unlikely to significantly deter purchases, noting that refiners which have been previously sanctioned continued processing Iranian oil. China, the world's biggest crude importer, buys more than 80% of Iran's shipped oil, according to 2025 data from Kpler. Beijing has said it rejects unilateral sanctions. And a Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson said Thursday, sanctions will not solve the conflict. Iranian oil exports plunged to only 100,000 BPD by July 2019 after the U.S. further enforced sanctions and China temporarily suspended purchases. Later that year, in September 2019, a devastating drone attack hit Saudi Arabia's massive Apaqiq oil processing facility. A move analyst showed the ability of Iran and its proxies to escalate the fight when Western financial pressure on Tehran increases. As reported by Thomson Reuters. The United States targets Hezbollah with fresh sanctions, emphasizing ties to the Iranian government. The United States will, on Thursday, issue fresh sanctions targeting Lebanon's Hezbollah, including redesignating it under a terrorism authority, according to a statement seen by Reuters, in a move aimed at emphasizing its links to the Iranian government. When Hezbollah is not being designated under any new authority, the Treasury Department is redesignating it as a specially designated global terrorist for service to the Iranian regime under the command of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps force, according to the statement. A U.S. official said that the redesignation was intended to show that Hezbollah is acting on behalf of the Iranian government and update the public record to link the designation to Hezbollah's actions on behalf of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Quds force. Hezbollah was first designated under the authority in 2001 and is also sanctioned by the U.S. as a foreign terrorist organization. The United States also designated a group of 10 people Thursday that it accused of smuggling cash for Hezbollah. The U.S. official also said that measures to be taken on Thursday of this week were separate to further action the U.S. plans to take against Iran as Washington looks to resolve a war it began alongside Israel nearly 6 months ago. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said earlier this week that he would hold a press conference on Monday next week about the toughest sanctions in history that Washington plans to impose on Iran, as reported by Thomson Reuters. President Trump to bolster Graham Senate bid. President Donald Trump heads to South Carolina today, to campaign for Darlene Graham, a political novice whose unexpected bid for a six-year U.S. Senate term will test the president's influence in a heavily Republican state. President Trump will appear at an evening rally for Graham at the Myrtle Beach Convention Center days after the sitting senator tripped over a basic question about U.S. foreign policy in a debate this week with U.S. Representative Ralph Norman, her opponent in next Tuesday's Republican primary runoff. "I'm just going to be honest here. I'm not that informed on national security," Graham replied, to the astonishment of the debate audience when asked if Taiwan and the South China Sea are national security issues for the United States. "National security is not my thing," Graham said. Darlene Graham, age 62, specialized in services for the disabled before Republican South Carolina Governor Henry McMaster appointed her to fill the seat of her late brother, Senator Lindsey Graham. The late senator had been a leading voice on U.S. foreign policy and a staunch Trump supporter before he died last month of a heart ailment. Darlene Graham's current term runs until early January. But President Trump's endorsement of her decision to seek a full six-year Senate term in November's congressional elections rankled some South Carolina Republicans who criticized that move as an attempted coronation of a candidate with no political experience. Lindsey Graham was well informed on the United States national security. "Darlene Graham admits she's not. This is not something you inherit. It's critical in the U.S. Senate," former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, a Norman supporter, said on X. Senator Darlene Graham defended her debate response in a later Fox News interview. "I don't speak politician. I was just honest. And I think that's kind of a foreign concept," she said, arguing that South Carolina voters are more concerned about the cost of living, transgender issues, gun rights, and immigration. Norman, 73, a longtime real estate developer, is a leading conservative who has spent nearly a decade in the U.S. House of Representatives. He mounted an unsuccessful bid for governor, finishing third in the June primary. Graham and Norman emerged from a Republican field of 10 candidates in a special August 11th Senate primary, with Trump's endorsement. Darlene Graham bested Norman 32.8% to 24.6%, but fell well short of the clear majority needed to win the contest outright. The winner of next Tuesday's runoff will face Democrat Annie Andrews, a pediatrician who had more than $4.1 million in her campaign war chest at the end of June. Control of both the U.S. House of Representatives and Senate is up for grabs in November's midterm elections. The Republican nominee is favored to win the South Carolina Senate seat. President Trump carried South Carolina by nearly 18 percentage points in the 2024 presidential election, as reported by Thomson Reuters. J.D. Vance to campaign at the Ohio steel plant where his grandfather once worked. Vice President J.D. Vance will return to his hometown Friday to campaign for Republican candidates at the same steel plant where his grandfather used to work. Vance is set to speak at the Cleveland Cliffs Middleton Works facility, which was known as Armco Steel when his grandfather James Vance worked there for nearly 40 years. Vance has highlighted his Rust Belt roots while trying to boost GOP candidates ahead of the November midterm elections and to promote the Trump administration's economic policies and efforts to try to expand U.S. manufacturing. The Middleton event comes as he's expected to ramp up his travel schedule with more public events and fundraisers, according to a person familiar with the plans who was not authorized to speak publicly and discussed it on condition of anonymity. In a radio interview Thursday on the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton show, Vice President Vance said Friday's stop will be personally very meaningful because of his family's connection. He said it was an amazing opportunity to go talk about, frankly, plants like this would not exist if it were not for some of the Trump administration's economic policies. J.D. Vance, who will be joined by Energy Secretary Chris Wright, said he will also use the visit to stop by some Cincinnati chili restaurants. In his best-selling memoir, Hillbilly Elegy, Vance described the steel plant as an economic savior for his family that brought his grandparents from Kentucky's hills into the American middle class. He described how his grandfather, known to his grandchildren as Pawpaw, would boast when he saw an old Ford or Chevy that its steel was made by his company. His grandson's election as Vice President of the United States spurred pride in the Midwestern city, though Vance has faced some pushback to his portrayal of it in the book. He said kids derisively called it Middle Kentucky, otherwise known as Middletucky, when he was a child because it had so many transplants like his family. He said they brought problems with them from Kentucky, such as drug addiction, Mountain Dew mouth, and problematic fathers. In the 2024 election, Trump and Vance won about 62% of the vote in the city's precincts. His mother, Beverly Akins, and his sister still live in Middletown. Ohio has lost its political bellwether status and turned red during the Trump era. But Democrats see a chance to win both the governor's office and a U.S. Senate seat from Republican hands this year as anti-Trump sentiment buoys their party. Republican Senator John Husted, who was appointed to replace J.D. Vance in the Senate, is trying to hold on to his seat against a challenge from former Senator Sherrod Brown, a longtime Ohio politician with a pro-working-class message who lost his reelection bid to Republican Bernie Marino 2 years ago. Brown has capitalized on public opposition to data centers in the campaign and aired ads calling Husted the face of data centers in Ohio. The National Republican Senatorial Committee, the GOP's Senate campaign arm, warned in a memo this week that backlash to the centers has left Husted vulnerable. Vivek Ramaswamy, a Vance ally, is the party's nominee for governor in a race against Democrat Amy Acton. Democrats have not won the Ohio governor's office in two decades. Vance, whose family still keeps a home in Cincinnati, where they sometimes spend weekends, is making his first public visit since his fourth child was born in July. As part of his plans for ramping up his travel schedule, his office announced a trip Monday to Brewer, Maine, where former Republican Governor Paul LePage is running against Democrat Matt Dunlap, the state auditor, in a competitive House district, as reported by the Associated Press. The Department of Justice seeks to question FBI officials on Mar-a-Lago search, says sources. The Justice Department has requested to interview FBI officials who were involved in the 2022 search of Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida as part of a wide-ranging probe examining past investigations of the president. Four sources familiar with the matter said on Thursday. The request came from investigators working with Joe DeGenova, a Trump ally who began overseeing the Florida-based investigation earlier this year. The investigation has been seeking to establish that President Trump was the victim of criminal conspiracy against his rights. The questioning over the Mar-a-Lago search, which was first reported by the Associated Press, is an indication that the probe is examining a range of prior government investigations into Trump's conduct. Spokespeople for the Justice Department and FBI did not immediately respond to requests for comment. The investigation so far had appeared to focus mostly on a 2017 U.S. intelligence assessment that concluded Russia sought to boost Trump's presidential campaign in 2016. Investigators have intervened and interviewed current and former intelligence employees over the last several months. Several former career FBI officials who were involved in the search for classified documents at Mar-a-Lago have been approached for voluntary interviews in recent weeks, two of the sources said. The other two confirmed there had been outreach to FBI officials who were involved in the search. They spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss an ongoing investigation. It is not clear what charges prosecutors may be exploring. The Justice Department in Trump's second term has investigated and, in some cases, prosecuted several Trump critics and others who resisted his agenda or led investigations into him. The FBI search turned up more than 100 classified documents stashed at Mar-a-Lago, including highly sensitive national security records. The search led to criminal charges against President Trump and two associates who were accused of illegally retaining classified documents and obstructing government efforts to retrieve the material. President Trump has for years railed against the search of his resort, and his lawyers, led by now Attorney General Todd Blanche, asked a judge to exclude evidence from it, arguing the search warrant was unlawful. Prosecutors maintained they had sufficient justification, including evidence that Trump thwarted previous attempts to recover the records. A judge dismissed the case after concluding the lead prosecutor, Jack Smith, had been unlawfully appointed to the role. The DOJ dropped its appeal of that decision after Trump won the 2024 election, as reported by Thomson Reuters. President Trump aims to boost commercial space launches. U.S. President Donald Trump on Thursday signed a memo to help drastically increase the number of U.S. commercial space launches, including directing government agencies to look at federal land for new launch and reentry sites. The White House wants to enable at least 1,000 launches and reentries annually by 2030, up from 178 launches last year, a figure that is already 10 times higher than in 2013 and dominated by Elon Musk's SpaceX. The memo, focused on boosting the commercial space industry, called on agencies to incentivize co-development of space transportation infrastructure with private sector partners, expedite permitting and environmental reviews, and ensure adequate wireless spectrum for space launches. Trump also wants to return U.S. astronauts to the moon by 2028. The memo directs NASA to facilitate commercial transportation to the moon and commercial robotic access to Mars and to explore commercial avenues to send humans to Mars. White House Office of Science and Technology Policy Director Michael Kratsios said the new National Space Transportation Policy meets this moment of explosive growth and positions America to lead the next era of space. He said it calls for a commercial-first approach, enabling Americans on the moon by 2028 and initial moon base elements by 2030, and rapid, resilient launch capabilities for national security. President Trump wants a new federal reentry site identified within 90 days. President Trump also wants agencies to refrain from conducting U.S. government space transportation activities that preclude, discourage, or compete with United States commercial space transportation activities unless required by public safety or national security. In May, the head of the Federal Aviation Administration said SpaceX aimed to reach 10,000 annual launches within 5 years. SpaceX conducted 170 launches in 2025, deploying about 2,500 satellites. In January, SpaceX said it wants to launch a constellation of 1 million satellites that will orbit Earth and harness the sun to power AI data centers. Trump wants several cabinet agencies to quickly identify future space launch and reentry sites on government property and to designate priority airspace for critical space launch corridors. He also wants integration of space transportation activities into air traffic control modernization. At the start of his second term, President Trump had repeatedly talked about sending missions to Mars as Musk, a major donor who has made sending humans to the Red Planet a priority for SpaceX, served a stint as a close advisor and powerful government efficiency czar. But lawmakers in Congress slowly put the moon back in focus, pressuring NASA to stick with the agency's Artemis Moon program, on which billions of dollars have been spent. Trump's memo also directed federal agencies to consider, on a case-by-case basis, requests to launch commercial foreign space vehicles in the United States, as reported by Thomson Reuters. The Pentagon officials mull firing Stars and Stripes publisher before retirement. Pentagon officials have discussed firing the longtime publisher of Stars and Stripes before his scheduled retirement as the Trump administration moves to overhaul the military newspaper, according to CBS News, which cited U.S. officials. Max D. Lederer, Jr., who has served as publisher for 19 years, told colleagues this week he will retire September 30th, citing fundamental differences with Pentagon leadership over the direction of the publication. It was unclear whether the Pentagon had decided to remove Lederer early or when any decision might be made. The Defense Department did not immediately comment, CBS News reported. The newspaper receives about $15 million in taxpayer funding, roughly half of its 29 million annual budget, according to a person familiar with its operations and cited by CBS News. The remainder comes from subscriptions, advertising, and other revenue. Stars and Stripes has long maintained editorial independence from the Pentagon despite receiving federal funding, and its reporters have frequently covered problems within the military as well as decisions by Pentagon leaders. The potential removal of Lederer comes as the Trump administration pushes a broad modernization effort at the publication. Pentagon Chief Spokesperson Sean Parnell said in January that the department would modernize Stars and Stripes and refocus its content away from woke distractions that siphon morale. Parnell said the newspaper should focus on warfighting, weapon systems, fitness, lethality, survivability, and all things military, rather than republish material in what he called DC gossip columns. A March Pentagon memorandum expanded the department's oversight of the publication, restricted its use of wire services and syndicated material, eliminated comics, and called for a transition away from print toward digital operations, according to Stars and Stripes. The newspaper has faced criticism from Pentagon officials over declining readership and its reliance on material produced by other news organizations. CBS News reported that an average of about 1.4 million people view Stars and Stripes each day, primarily online, while print editions remain available overseas, including in locations where internet access can be unreliable. Lederer said in his message to employees that his philosophy of leadership and understanding of the value and mission of Stars and Stripes differ in fundamental ways from the direction of Pentagon leadership. He said he would work through September to ensure a smooth transition. The dispute has also involved the newspaper's former ombudsman, Jacqueline Smith, who was fired by the Pentagon in April of this year. Smith had criticized Pentagon changes to the publication, including restrictions on syndicated material, and later sued the Defense Department, alleging that her firing was retaliatory and violated her First Amendment right. The Pentagon did not provide a reason for Smith's dismissal, according to the Washington Post. The controversy has drawn attention to the unusual relationship between Stars and Stripes and the Defense Department. The newspaper's staff are federal employees, and the publication receives government funding, but it has historically operated with editorial independence. A 1988 Government Accountability Office report examining allegations of military censorship noted that General Dwight D. Eisenhower had defended Stars and Stripes during World War II and wanted the newspaper to remain free of military propaganda and interference. The newspaper continues to cover military operations and issues affecting service members, including the ongoing war in the Middle East and the experiences of troops deployed there. The administration's effort to reshape Stars and Stripes comes amid broader changes to the Pentagon media relations, including restrictions imposed last year on news organizations covering the Defense Department. For now, Lederer remains publisher and is scheduled to retire September 30th, but discussions about removing him early could mark another significant step in the Pentagon's effort to change the direction of the newspaper. That's all the time we have today. Thank you for listening to Talking Information Center News. We hope that you will look for us, like us, and share us at TIC Network on Facebook, Instagram, and X. Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful day.